you know how ridiculous this game was? Rudy Gobert threw two flashy passes in this one. Two of them. One of them was a cross-court pass to the corner. Rudy Gobert. One of them was a behind-the-back to the corner. Rudy Gobert. Y'all gonna let him clown y'all? Y'all gonna let that man clown y'all? Welcome back to the Kenny Beecham Podcast. Today, I am ranking every NBA playoff series about how done it is. Some of these series, even though we just got two games in, I feel pretty confident that it is over. We're going to talk about that. I need you to leave a like, subscribe to the channel. We were just talking about 45% of y'all watching these videos are not subscribed to the channel, which I don't know what you're doing. You know what? I'm going to be honest with you. There are some YouTubers out there that I didn't realize I wasn't subscribed to until I heard somebody say it. They just pop up and recommend it so much, and I've watched videos for a long time and didn't realize I wasn't subscribed. Check to see if you're one of those people. Hell, hit the bell. So if you are subscribed, you still know exactly when the videos are dropping. We're dropping twice a week for the playoffs. We're dropping shorts. We're doing a lot of different content on this channel. Hit the bell, subscribe. Audio platforms, give us 5 stars. Goes a very, very long way. I do want to say, because we are only just two games into all of these series, yeah, we might be overreacting a little bit, but that is what it is, baby. We live in the moment. And sometimes in the moment, some teams look done for. All right? Let's get into the very first series. You know, I want to start off with the one that I guess has caused the most controversy so far in the playoffs, and that is the 2-seed New York Knicks going against the 7-seed Philadelphia 76ers. And what a game that we have in game number two. A game that felt like it was done up by 5 or 40 seconds to go. We see a big-time shot by Jalen Brunson. And in that shot, it hit like 3 parts of the rim and it drops in after Jalen Brunson had been struggling through the first, 7.5, 7 3/4 quarters. We're going to talk about that in a sec. And then they get the steal. Dante DiVincenzo misses the first shot. Isaiah Hartenstein, who's been all heart and hustle, gets the rebound, kicks the OG. And OG had the right mind to get that ball up to Dante again. And Dante don't miss two in a row very often. Boom. Just like that, the New York Knicks end up winning this game. There's a lot of controversy because, well, on that inbound play, there was some fouling, some not. And, we do know because the last two-minute report came out, and here's what it says. Brunson pulls Maxey's jersey away from his body, which affects Maxey's ability to secure the pass with 27 seconds left. That is the one that most 76er fans will tell you. There's a really good screen grab that went viral on Twitter of literally his jersey being off of his body. And then also, there is another one that said Josh Hart steps forward into Maxey's space and initiates lower body contact that causes Maxey to lose his balance and fall into the floor with 24.9 seconds left. And those are two crucial missed calls. Let's be real with each other. Those are two crucial missed calls. And in this time, when you're up by 2 points trying to get the ball in, you call this foul. Tyrese Maxey's a very great free throw shooter. Shout out to him on his most improved player. He's probably knocking down one or two of these, and then the game is completely different. But that call does not, they don't blow the whistle. They don't blow the call. And it makes me question the last 2 minute report and the value of it. You know, this is a playoff game, a series that, you know, a lot of people are kind of split on at least going into it. I had Knicks in 6 or Knicks in 7, but some people went to 76ers because, well, Joel Embiid is the best player in the series if he's healthy, and Tyrese Maxey is a stud in himself. But in this game where you're 40 seconds away from tying the series and taking home court advantage, you don't get the whistle and the 2 minute report say, hey, that's on us. What's the value in it? Because it doesn't really give comfort to 76er fans because, yeah, they can say, look, they missed the call, but guess what? They're still down 2-0. I know they're filing the grievance, but the grievance don't mean anything. We ain't had a grievance matter in basketball since like 2006. And Lord knows they're not going to give them the benefit of the doubt in the NBA playoffs. So the last 2 minute report is this confirmation of some missed calls, but it doesn't mean anything because the Knicks are still up 2-0. And one thing I really like about Tyrese Maxey is his willingness to embrace a lot of this stuff. Like even afterwards, so many people talk about the missed foul. I mean, Joel Embiid was very candid about it in his post-game interview. The interview they refused to look up. I don't know if his eyes have been hurting him because I don't know if y'all saw the clips when he first got injured in that first game where he threw the self-lob to himself and they had the camera this close to his face. Only one of his eyes was blinking. And there was another shot in game number two where one of his eyes were blinking. I don't know if he's got something optically going on, but even in this post-game interview, his head is down the entire way. He will mention to you how crucial of a miss that was. Nick Nurse will mention to you how crucial of a miss that was. And Tyrese Maxey was like, well, I got to be stronger with the ball. I love that about him, man. He's so optimistic and so willing to say that a basketball game is not lost in the last 45 seconds in a lot of cases. There's a lot of different things that you do differently to lose a game. And one of the ones is one that Tyrese Maxey talked about, that there was a crucial turnover late in this game that led to a New York Knicks bucket to cut the lead. So, yeah, you don't lose because of this moment, but man, if that whistle was called, then this series is probably 1-1. But getting back to it, I went on First Take. In between the commercials, or we were filming some other stuff, I was talking to Stephen A. Smith about it, and I was just telling him that, like, even though you guys are up 2-0, this series is very far from over. There are some series that we're going to talk about where it's a 2-0 lead one way, and I feel very damn confident that there's nothing the opposing team can do to come back to win that series. I do not feel that same way about this one. I have it as a 70-30 split, 70 going the Knicks way. Like, obviously, when you're up 2-0, you're going to have the benefit of the doubt because you have to, you know, is it really likely that you see the 76ers win four games of the last five? Like, it's really, really tough to see. But it's possible, because I thought that in these games that the 76ers played basically the brand of basketball that they want, specifically on the defensive side of the ball. Our guy Jalen Brunson, widely renowned as the best point guard in the Eastern Conference this regular season, has struggled so much. He's shooting like 29% from the field. And then again, luckily he hit that big shot that mattered the most in that corner. But they've thrown him so many big bodies and really made it difficult for him. Where the game plan for the 76ers is let Josh Hart shoot. And damn, Josh Hart has been great at it in the first two games. But how likely is it that you get two more Josh Hart games where he had four threes? He hadn't had four threes in a game since January, and he's just had back-to-back of those in the first two games of the playoffs. Like, I think that Nick Nurse, and I mentioned this in the last episode, Nick Nurse and Tom Thibodeau have been coaching so phenomenally to really get what they want. And I think that this series is still alive. I really do think this series is still alive. Now, you can say, Kenny, hey, the Knicks are up 2-0 and Jalen Brunson ain't had a game just yet. Like, if you're playing devil's advocate, I feel that, but I also think there are so many different factors that say that the 76ers can make this a series. I mean, statistically speaking, they have a 6% chance to win the series, so it's not very high. And maybe it's even lower because Joel Embiid doesn't look amazing, and it's so weird that he can drop 35 and whatever and still look unhealthy. But again, the Knicks, I got it at about a 70-30 in the Knicks' favor. Shout out to Isaiah Hartenstein. Shout out to Josh Hart, Dante DiVincenzo, Miles McBride. They just have a lot of people stepping up. And even their second most important player, if you will, OG Anunoby, hasn't had an amazing series so far. So maybe I'm convincing myself to lower that number for the 76ers. Either way, that's where I have it in my notes, and that is where we're going to keep it. The next series out east that I want to talk about is the Bucks series versus the Pacers, where it is now tied 1-1. And this was a very interesting game. One thing I will say, I love the beef. This is something we saw in the regular season in that five-game series they played. These teams hate each other. The fan bases hate each other. Hell, I made one tweet about Pascal Siakam being great through the first two games, and then I got Bucks fans mad, and then that got the Pacers fans mad, and now I'm tagged in a million tweets of fan bases going back-to-back with each other. I love a good old-fashioned beef specifically because these two teams are in the same division, so they will play against each other a lot. I thought in game one that the Bucks play to their strengths. There's one place, or I guess a couple places, you don't want to be in a fight with the Indiana Pacers. You do not want to be on a run and gun, and you don't want to try to match the athleticism, especially the Bucks. The Bucks are one of the oldest teams of basketball, if not the oldest team of basketball, and they just don't have these high-flying, super athletic dudes in their roster. The Indiana Pacers have that. And in game number one, I thought they did an amazing job playing their brand of basketball. They were very meticulous in every possession. And this is one of those teams in Indiana Pacers where you have to do that because one wrong step can lead to a fast break. One wrong step can lead to a mismatch for them on the offensive side of the ball. And one thing that they did so great there, I thought they lost that in game number two, specifically when we got down to that fourth quarter when it was relatively close. And then the Pacers went on a 23-4 run. And a lot of that was like, we took an ill-advised shot or a shot that wasn't the best look. And now we're out of the play. And there go the Pacers really out there. They play right into the Pacers' hands. And obviously, this goes without saying, but they desperately miss Giannis. I mean, he's one of the three best players in all of basketball, top two player in basketball, if you ask me. So, of course, they miss Giannis offensively. But I'm looking at that defensive side of the ball because Pascal Siakam has been everything you could have imagined if you're an Indiana Pacers fan. where when he's guarded by Brook Lopez, Brook is just too slow. Brook is going to play 6 feet off of him, and Pascal is a willing shooter, and he has hit the three-point shot in the series. When they put Jay Crowder on him, he's just too small. Giannis is the perfect combination of height, length, speed, all of that. And without him, it's like free food for Pascal. And the problem with all of this is that we just don't know if Giannis is coming back in the series. Like, I saw that he went through some shoot around and stuff, but he's not running just yet. And to think that this series is going to continue in just a few days seems very unlikely that he's playing game number three. And if he can't really run right now, doesn't it feel unlikely that he'll be able to run in 6 days from now? So that's where things get really, really difficult. I thought in game number two, Tyrese Halliburton was very good at not giving the ball up early. That was something else that the Milwaukee Bucks did in game number one, where they brought a ton of pressure to Tyrese and say, get the ball out of his hands and make his teammates make plays, make his teammates make shots. And I thought in game number two, he was very poised because they threw two bodies at him a lot of the times right when he got cross half court, and he took his time and found his teammates, and ultimately they opened the game up for him. He had that big offensive rebound that he brought back for a three, and that was like a momentum shifting shot for them, and they took home court advantage in this one. And I think ultimately I still have it that the Bucks are a slight favorite in this one just because I don't know what's going on with Giannis. I got it at 53-47. Shout out to Capital Steez. If you know, you know. But it's so very close, and I can't wait to see what brand of basketball we get collectively in game number three. Will it be a Pacers game? Will it be a Bucks game? Because depending on the pace of the play or depending on the shots that the team gets, that'll really determine who wins this game. I mean, maybe that goes without saying. If you play a Bucks brand of basketball, you're probably going to get a Bucks win. If you play Pacers brand of basketball, you're probably going to get a Pacers win. So game number three is crucial. Are they front runners? Are the Indiana Pacers front runners? I couldn't tell you, but that's what Bobby Portis said. And then Tyrese Halliburton talked about some situations with his brother Marcel, which is just, if true, and I don't think he has a reason to lie about these type of things, if true, it's just uncalled for in the NBA community or just in the community in general. If you don't know what I'm talking about, Hallie comes to the podium and says that his brother was called the N-word, which again, no matter the circumstances, is not okay. I know I never want to put a blanket over a franchise. That's not the Bucks fandom. It was that one particular fan. But we just got to cut that type of stuff out. It don't matter if this dude is the star player of the opposition, the mother of the opposition. It's just let fans be fans. Let Marcel root for his brother and his brother's team without it getting too crazy, okay? A little fan base beef shouldn't go that far. And you just don't want that. So I got a 53-49. Let's go to the Celtics. Losing game number two. They lost game number two. And again, shout out to the Heat. This is a team that for the second year in a row, I have had zero faith in making it a series. But here they are setting records of 23 of 43 from the three-point line. And that's just so interesting because in the postseason so far, 43% of their shots have been from the three-point line. In the regular season, it was about 35. And in this series alone, because the postseason counts the playing games to them as well, but in this series against the Celtics, 48% of the shots have become behind the arc. And it seems as though Eric Spoelstra's like, hell, we don't really have anything to lose. So, and the only way we're going to beat this Boston Celtics team is if we beat them at their own game. This is one of the highest volume, highest percentage three-point shooting teams in basketball. So let's just go out there and try to match that. And then this game, boy, did they match that. Caleb Martin just hates the Boston Celtics. Last year in the conference finals, we averaged, 19 on 60, 50, 90 shooting or something crazy like that. And in game number one, he had 4 points. Tonight, he hit like 5 threes. This is the best Tyler Hero game of the postseason by far. We talked about last episode how the Boston Celtics have these physical defenders that can knock him off the spot and make it so difficult for him to create for himself or for others. And I thought he was so damn patient in this one. That was the thing that stood out to me watching Tyler Hero in game number two, how patient he was and finding his teammates and how much that opened the game up for him. I mean, a lot of the shots that the Knicks took or the Heat took in this one felt really open. And I know Joe Mazzulla went to the podium after the game and said that they got good contests on majority of those shots. My eye test said that they didn't. The tracking data is probably out by the time you're watching this episode, but it felt as though a lot of the shots that they took in this one were completely open. And it's just cool to see Eric Spoelstra again just showcase why he is one of the best coaches in basketball. He is the best coach in basketball, if you ask me, with his ragtag group of players with no Jimmy Butler can go into the most dominant regular season team, one of the most dominant regular season teams ever, and say, hey, The TD Garden is ours. Like, this team, for a part of this season, there were conversations like, are the Celtics going to be the first team to go 41-0 at home? I know we had the Spurs team go 40-1 or something like that from a few years back. But, like, is this team going to be that good, like, that good at home? And then he said, nah, I mean, maybe in the regular season, but postseason comes around, we're going to do our thing. And they did that. So that felt like a huge, huge win. And last year when they played against the Celtics, only 31% of their shots came from behind the arc. And part of that is, like, Jimmy Butler was a huge part of the run in the conference finals last year. And obviously with no Jimmy Butler here, then you take more threes, you make more threes. But it's just, even with that said, I got it at 94-6 as the percentages. Heat fans, I'm sorry. I admire the will, the effort, the passion that y'all play with on a night-to-night basis, but I still feel like the Boston Celtics are the better team collectively, and they just got to, I guess, close out a little bit more. I don't know what the hell they was doing. Jaylen Brown said that the people that they wanted to take shots were taking shots, and they just so happened to make them today. And I feel that, and I see basically that's what Nick Nurse is kind of saying, like, we want Josh Hart to take shots, and he's just making it. But eventually, you got to get a hand up, man. When the brother hit the fourth three, you got to do something. I mean, it started off very early with Nikola Jovic hitting, what, the first two threes of the game? Like, oh, this might be a Jovic game. And it was a little bit of everybody. So last episode, we talked about on FanDuel Sportsbook, after the 1-0 series lead, the Celtics were minus 50,000 to win that series. Now it's 1-1. And the Celtics are now down to minus 2,500, which is still really, really high. It is still really, really high. But the odds have shifted dramatically with that one loss. And that says something. The Celtics, I'm going to be honest with you, I know the game of basketball, you can lose on any single night. This team is so dominant in the regular season. Losing this early on in the playoffs is not a good sign. Historic shooting night for the Miami Heat. I ain't taking nothing away from them. But losing this early on is not a good sign. Hell, I was thinking there's a possibility, you know, the next round they'd go against who? Next round, they either go against the Cavs or the Magic. That could have been a sweep. Conference finals, of course, Bucks, Pacers, Knicks, 76ers. I couldn't say sweep, but that should have been a 5-6 game series. You lose early on to the Miami Heat. Come on, man. You just got to be better. And Jimmy Butler's going on to Instagram and trolling Jaylen Brown out of all people. So it was just, I still have it at 94-6, though. Shout out to the Miami Heat. The next game or the next series in the Eastern Conference is Cavs versus Magic. This is one of those series that I feel like I haven't got as many eyes on or many minutes watched of compared to the others. Like I feel okay about my takes about it, but not as comfortable as I feel about the Pacers game or the Knicks game or the Western Conference games. Because first they got the first national TV game of the opening playoffs, and the first half of that game, I'm driving home from the podcast studio from Numbers on the Board. And then the next time they played against each other, they did get the NBA TV game while the other game was going on. Was the Knicks 76ers that started right after them. So it's like, I want to kind of prioritize the Knicks versus 76ers over this. But this is what I have it at. It's far from over for the Orlando Magic. You want to hear how crazy these stats are for the Orlando Magic? Dude, the first two games of the series, remember that there are 16 teams in the playoffs right now, 16. They are 14th in rim percentage or shots made at the rim. Percentage-wise. So, yeah, like, not how often they get to the rim, but when they're there, how many of them are they making? They're 14th. They're very last in mid-range percentage, and they're very last at 2-point or 3-point percentage at 24%. Obviously, it's going to be hard to win basketball games. You can't score. But I still believe that there's no way that they shoot this bad for the entire series. And I know the track record of the Orlando Magic. They're not a good shooting team. But 24% is crazy. And a lot of that is them missing open looks. It is kind of crazy to see the Cavs using the same strategy that hurt them last year. Like the thing that Tom Thibodeau did against them, they're doing that now against JB Bickerstaff and company or against Jamal Mosley and company. Was like, we're going to shrink the floor, let them shoot. We don't trust a single person on their roster except for their star player. So make it extremely difficult for their star player, Paolo Banchero, and let the others shoot. And that's exactly what the Knicks did in the first series against the Cavs last year. Was like, we only care about Donovan Mitchell. Nobody else matters to us. Shrink the floor, kill the glass, and dominate that way. And now they're doing that to the Magic through the first two games of this series. Again, I don't think it's very realistic that they're going to shoot 24% for the entirety of the series. But even with that said, I got an 85-15 for the Cavaliers. I just think that even though the Cavs, let's be honest with each other, the Cavs haven't put together a good offensive game yet either. Part of that is the Orlando Magic has been a very good defensive team as well. But the Cavs ain't had a good offensive game yet. Donovan Mitchell's been great. The Max Strus, George Niang ain't done a damn thing. The two biggest acquisitions for their team ain't done nothing yet. But I still got it at 85-15. Magic, I hope they make it a series. I think my initial prediction was Cavs in six. So I need the Magic to win a couple games so I can look like a genius to cover up from the bad ones I had. Get in on all the NBA buzzer beaters, Tomahawk Gems, and Ankle Breakers with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed when they place a $5 bet. If you've been thinking about joining FanDuel, there's no better time than right now. Personally, I like the bet of the Boston Celtics making their way to the conference finals minimum. But we'll see. The app is so easy to use, and there are so many different ways that you can bet, like same-game parlays. You can find bets in a new Explore tab. You can make a parlay using the Parlay Hub, which is basically taking all the popular parlays and putting them in one spot. So visit FanDuel.com/Kenny and make your first bet a layup. FanDuel, the official partner of the NBA. Must be 21 plus and present in select states. FanDuel is offering online sports wagering in Kansas under an agreement with Kansas Star Casino, LLC. First online real money wager only. $5 pregame money line wager required. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued with non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbooks.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit fanduel.com/RG. In Colorado, Iowa, Michigan, New Jersey, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Illinois, Kentucky, Tennessee, and Virginia. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXTSTEP to 53342 in Arizona. 1-888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org/chat in Connecticut. 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana. 1-800-522-4700 or visit ksgamblinghelp.com in Kansas. 1-877-770-STOP in Louisiana. Visit mdgamblinghelp.org in Maryland. Visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net in West Virginia. Or call 1-800-522-4700 in Wyoming. Hope is here. Visit gamblinghelplinepa.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support in Massachusetts. Or call 1-877-8-HOPE-NEW-YORK or text HOPE-NEW-YORK in New York. I picked the Suns in seven. We are two games in. And part of me subscribes to the idea that the series doesn't start until a road team wins. But sometimes the games are so dominant that I don't even care. It's kind of this. Right now, I have it at 80-20. So I did give them a 20% chance of coming back just because I respect Kevin and Devin so much. But it ain't been pretty. One of the main problems with the Phoenix Suns, as far as the on-paper stuff, we could talk about the off-paper or the off-court stuff, but in the games that they've played so far under the Kevin Durant, Devin Booker era, they have needed those two players to not be good, not just be great. They've needed those two players in their wins in the postseason to be the best versions of themselves. You don't believe me? Versus the Clippers last year in game number two, those two players combined for 63 points. That is more than what they averaged in the regular season. That seems kind of tame, I guess. Game three that they won against the Clippers, they combined for 73 points. Game after that, game four, 61. Game five, to close the series, they dropped 72 points collectively between those two guys. Those two guys. And then it gets to the game against the series against the Nuggets. Game number three, the game that they won first, they combined for 86 points against the Nuggets in that game. And I think that's the game that Jokic has 56 in himself and they still lost. And then in game number four, the only other game that they won in the series, they combined for 72 again. So there is no wins in their playoff history together. Again, we're talking about basically two series and a half a series right now. There have been no games that they've won without their two best players being undoubtedly the two best players on the court. It hasn't happened. And that is some scary, scary stuff. The perfect example, in the game number two versus the Cavs, Anthony Edwards had no great game. Offensively, he had no great game. Jaden McDaniels had 25. Karl-Anthony Towns had a good game after a bunch of fouls. Rudy Gobert is phenomenal. Mike Conley was phenomenal. Anthony Edwards, their best player, had the supporting cast to support these dudes or to support him. He didn't need to be the best player on the court. Devin and Kevin need to be the best player on the court for them to win playoff games. And that is not a recipe for a championship team. You telling me that one of my best players can't have an off game? Not just one of them, because for game number one, remember, Kevin Durant had 35 plus, or he had 35 points. And they still lost by a lot because Devin and Brad combined for 30. Last year when they were doing this, I believed it a little bit more. Or like, yeah, if Devin don't have a good game, but at least we still got Chris Paul. At least we still have DeAndre Ayton. Like, they had a better supporting cast. Nowadays, it's really Kevin, Devin, and Brad. And because you don't trust anybody else in their court to give you a great game. And now Grayson Allen tweaked his ankle. You had a Jock Landale game, even though in the fourth quarter, he took way too many shots. Why is he taking post hooks twice in the fourth quarter or back-to-back possessions? I don't know the answer to that. They need their two best players to be top 10 in basketball all the time. And that's just hard to do in a playoff setting. Specifically, when one of them is going to get hounded by Jaden McDaniels for the entire game. That man, Jaden McDaniels. I could have never expected he was going to be as good as he is right now. Never. And in this game, he was walking his way to the basket. There was a time in this one, you know how ridiculous this game was? Rudy Gobert threw two flashy passes in this one. Two of them. One of them was a cross-court pass to the corner. Rudy Gobert. One of them was a behind-the-back to the corner. Rudy Gobert. Y'all gonna let him clown y'all? Y'all gonna let that man clown y'all? Karl-Anthony Towns was an unsung hero in this one. He had three fouls in the first quarter. And I thought after that, he played a phenomenal game. But, like, the box score is not going to say it. He didn't shoot the ball very well. But there was a few possessions in a row where I dialed in on Karl-Anthony Towns, and he played perfect defense. Perfect defense. Karl-Anthony Towns. What? Perfect defense? Man, the reason they traded for Rudy Gobert because we couldn't get one possession of Karl-Anthony Towns and playing perfect defense. And here he is having multiple in a row. Uncle Mike Conley looks phenomenal. I said this on a video earlier today, or I guess yesterday as you're watching this, that Mike Conley, at best, is like the 18th best point guard in basketball. At best. You can make an argument of some people to be above him. So maybe it's 20, maybe it's 22. I don't really know. But because he is a table setter, and because he controls the tempo and controls the energy of the game, he's a valuable, valuable piece to the Minnesota Timberwolves. The Suns don't have that. Devin Booker, plus playmaker. Kevin Durant, plus playmaker. Bradley Beal, plus playmaker. They don't have the Mike Conley control the game type of guy. And that goes such a long way. Devin Booker and Bradley Beal dribbling off their own legs. Errant passes going all over the place. And they just don't defend great enough to warrant them having bad offensive games. Rudy Gobert's had a masterclass in this one. I still said that it is 80-20. But that 20% is strictly on the fact that Kevin Durant is great. But hell, Kevin. If we have another flame out early in the playoffs, and y'all know this is not even my personality when I watch these sports. We have another early flame out in the playoffs. We got to have some conversations. Some of y'all have already had these conversations. I never want to buy into them, but hell, he might be making me do it. And it's not necessarily him. But again, number two, there are too many times where you forget that Kevin Durant exists. In a playoff game, Kevin. Sometimes I feel like Kevin Durant is trying too hard to be the team player when he is a killer, capital K killer, and he can dog anybody on the court at any time. Sometimes I want Kevin to do what I saw Shai Gilgeous-Alexander do early or in the third quarter of this game against the Pelicans. I guess it was late second quarter too, where it's like, this guy guarding me ain't on nothing. And I'm going to drop 12 straight points. 12 straight. Give me the ball and clear out. I am Kevin Durant. Give me the ball and clear out. I am Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Kevin don't be doing that no more like that. Well, he hasn't done it through the first two games. And yeah, he had 35 the other night. But I mean, like, really take control of the game as being one of the greatest scorers to ever pick up a basketball. I want more of that. And Devin has been disappointed, but nobody's been more disappointed than Bradley Beal. I mean, Lord knows that contract right now is looking worse and worse by the day. Guaranteed $100 more million dollars with a no-trade clause? Everybody be talking about Zach LaVine money, and just trust me, Zach LaVine contract ain't good either. But that man is guaranteed $50 million annually for a few more seasons, and he gets to tell you, no, I don't want to get traded there. That's crazy. And if they flame out in the playoffs again, I don't know what you do to make this team better. It's so bad that people on Twitter are building Devin Booker trades. We should not be there. Devin Booker should be a one-time team guy, a one-team guy. But because there's no way to get out of this situation if you lose, it's like, man, if people on Twitter like, hell, the Orlando Magic could use some offense. Could they buy in on Franz Wagner? Like, that's where we're at right now. Should we be there? It may be a little bit too early, but that's what's happening actively on Twitter. Let's quickly go through this next series. The Nuggets versus Lakers. It is a 99-1. And I'm only giving that 1% because it's LeBron. And it's Anthony Davis. But if you didn't win that game number two, where you're up by 20 points, I don't know how many games you can win. This team has beat you 10 straight times. You've had double-digit leads in three of the last seven, and you lose them. You lose them. Jokic is the best player in basketball. He took Anthony Davis to the paint every single time on that run. Jamal Murray was awful through the first three quarters, and then boom, here he is hitting the clutch shot of the game and a couple big shots before that. I mean, if you don't win that one, you don't win many. You don't win any, maybe. I do want to give them benefit of the doubt and say they might take one at home because we are going back to Cali with it, but you got to win in Denver. You have to beat the Denver Nuggets. You're going to have to win a game in Denver, minimum. And the Lakers don't feel like they have a chance to do that. I the one thing you could definitely tell is that there is a conditioning difference. And part of that just might be we're at the Mile High City, man. We're in Denver. We play here 41 times a year. We're used to this altitude and stuff. But Anthony Davis was phenomenal through three quarters. And in the fourth quarter, I think he took one shot. He was off the ball so much. I don't know if he touched the ball more than three times in the fourth quarter. He was gassed. He was out of it. And then LeBron tried to do everything in his power to will them to it. He had two back-to-back threes, got a steal, led to a dunk. And I saw people critical of the last shot that he took. And I'm like, I don't think you can really be mad at that. In that fourth quarter, LeBron hit two or three threes exactly like that. And this one was way more open than the other ones. Just happened to miss it. And it opened up the door for Jamal Murray to hit a tough shot over one of the league's best defenders in Anthony Davis. So I can't do nothing but tip my hat. The big shot that Michael Porter Jr. took and hit was phenomenal. I can't do nothing but tip my hat to them and say, I'm expecting them to make it to the next round. 99-1. And I'm not going to spend too much time on that one. The next series is the Thunder versus the Pelicans. I have it at 90-10. I just don't think the Pelicans have enough firepower. And me and the guys were talking in Discord as we were watching the first half of this game, because I'm going to be honest with you. Once the fourth quarter came around, I hit up Greg, our producer, and said, let's film now, because the Pelicans are not coming back in this game at all. But we were talking about it. And Val started off this game hot. I think he scored the first 11 points for the Pelicans. And the guys were like, Derek, my boy Derek, from Numbers on the Board, he was saying like, man, I can't wait to see the OKC Thunder acquire a big man, like a bruising big man to add to their team to play alongside Chet. And I don't like that idea. And the main reason I don't like the idea is basically what I mentioned earlier when we were talking about Kevin Durant and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. When Shai went on his run of 12 straight points in this one, a lot of that is him one-on-one with a lot of space. And the guy that Derek was throwing around, and this is not, he was just saying a big body, right? He was saying Drummond. Drummond is the example. A guy like Drummond on the court right here clogs the paint up so much for Shai that 12 straight points that he scored may not end up at 12 because now the help defender from the big is there in the paint to deter him from getting to the basket. And the luxury that the Pelicans have is that five-man spacing, and they are willing to lose the offensive rebound battle. They're willing to lose a one-on-one bruising battle against Jonas Valanciunas because their offense is so damn elite with the five-out spacing that they're okay with Valanciunas dominating the first quarter of a game because they know that that's not sustainable for Val and that's not sustainable for the Pelicans. Where even in game number one, where Val dominated the first half or whatever, he couldn't close because he was too slow-footed. They had to throw Larry Nance in that one. You know what I'm saying? And the only team that you really, I can't say that to be in all honesty, but like in this playoff series alone, in this playoff year alone, the Denver Nuggets, the only real big man you're caring about is Jokic. They're on the opposite side of the bracket. We don't have to see them to the conference finals if both of us get there. Next round, if they win the series, which again, I got it so high, I'm pretty sure they're winning the series, is against the Mavericks, who have some good bigs. None of them is like no crazy bruiser. Those are lob threats, vertical threats, yada, yada, yada. And then you got the Clippers, who could win their series too. They got Zoo Alcindor out there. Shout out to Zubats. But Zubats is not winning you a game. Or he might win you a game. He's not winning you a series. So we feel confident in Chet's ability to maybe take a pounding from Jonas Valanciunas for a seven-game series. Well, it's not going to be a seven-game series because we're going to dominate them on the offensive side of the ball. So that's where my head is at with it. There might be a center that kind of balances all of that. I just don't know who that center is. I like the idea of the space they have with Chet and everything. And even on the defensive side of the ball, they did the same old thing that everybody does against the Thunder. It's like, hey, our big man is going to be guarding Josh Giddey. Giddey hit a couple threes in this one. It's like, what are you supposed to do? I think the NBA is better when OKC is in the playoffs. That crowd is electric. I need to get to an OKC playoff game because from as long as I can remember, basically, the OKC fans, when they have a game in the playoffs, they're going to show out. And one thing I like about their ownership, they're not afraid to print 20,000 shirts to put on the seats. The Clippers didn't do that this year, or at least so far, the first two games of the playoffs. You know, like, there's a whiteout in OKC. And I heard that they bully you to put those shirts on. They bully you. Well, if you know the shirts that sit on the thing, it's like OKC playoff, whatever, it's all white out. If you don't put the shirt on, they show you on the Jumbotron and they boo you until you put the goddamn shirt on. What? And the Clippers didn't do that. They don't have like this unity for the fans to wear the same outfit. OKC does that. It's great. Now they're up 2-0. Is this our last series? Yes, it is. It's Clippers versus Mavs, where the Mavericks took game number two. And it is only a small amount of things that are more special to me than watching a star player in the zone and watching them do something great, a big shot, a big block, a good stop, and them showing all of the emotion. And when Luka hit that step back on James Harden to ice the game with a minute and some change left, and he looked at the crowd and he yelled at them, and I ain't gonna repeat the words that he said because it was some beep bleep bleeps, but boy, was that special. You know what also was special? Luka Doncic's defense. Yeah. Yeah. I thought in game number one, his defense wasn't anything to talk about on the positive side. And in game number two, they played with a level of desperation that I expected the Suns to play with game number two. You know, like, yeah, you're the road team. So being down 2-0 is not unprecedented that we can come back. But the Mavericks went into game number two, and it felt like they were saying, if we don't win this game, we don't win this series. There's no chance. And they took that game away with Kawhi Leonard playing, who didn't look great through the first 2.5 quarters, but then eventually started to look a little bit better. Luka, down the stretch, this is per ESPN. When Luka was the nearest defender on the Clippers, they shot 2 of 17. And Kawhi, Paul George, and James Harden did not score any of those two shots. And down the stretch, they were hunting Luka. And there's a report that said that Luka Doncic told them, do not help, I'm fine. And he did that. And then hit the biggest shot of the game. It's a special talent, man. It's a special, special talent, man. And the reason why I think the Luka defense is cool, because, I mean, he's not going to be faster than a lot of the people he might get switched on to, right? Especially some of these guards, or even like a Paul George. Like, he's not going to be able to physically keep up with Paul George as far as lateral quickness and stuff. But he is a huge body. Like, people forget that this man is 6'7", 6'8", and a big guy. But he's also one of the best minds we have in basketball. So he's smart with it. He knows when to put his hand in the cookie jar and when not to, because he uses the same tactics against you. So I thought he was ridiculous down the stretch. Zubac got in foul trouble early in this game, and that changed the entire way that the Clippers wanted to play. In game number one, Zubac was the greatest of all time, it felt like. And in this one, when he got them two early fouls, it made it so that in the first quarter, they were 3 of 13 in the paint, which is some insane numbers. But when Zu Alcindor was out there, they were obviously a lot more efficient. The conversations about Luka in that one clip that went semi-viral, where he throws the pass to Maxi Kleber in the first game, and he does this little temper tantrum jumpy thing. There are a lot of people coming out like, man, this is like the worst kind of player to play with, so on and so on. Bro, have we not watched LeBron James play basketball? Talk to me. Because I've seen LeBron James throw passes for 21 years, and his teammates ain't got the hands to catch it, and he has done very similar stuff. But guess what? Everybody would have loved to play with LeBron. It's just the reality of it. He has an expectation for his teammates. Catch the goddamn ball, and we'll be in a good spot. And in game number two, guess what Maxi Kleber did? Got a huge offensive rebound, and it led to a bucket. And what did Luka Doncic do? Embraced him with high fives and hugs. Like, that is how you do it. It's okay that he let his emotion get the better of him for that 3 second in game number one where they were getting their ass dogged. But he also showed like, hell, you do the right thing, we feel great. And Maxi Kleber was great in game number two. Like, yeah, would you prefer that your star player don't jump up and down after a turnover? For sure. But not wanting to play alongside him is kind of crazy. To me personally, it's kind of crazy. Ultimately, I still got this series very, 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 very close. I have it 55-45 in the favor of the Mavericks just because they just took home court advantage. But it could actually go either way, obviously. Kawhi Leonard's back, and like I mentioned, he didn't look great to start off with, but he did start to put together some possessions. He even got that one steal on Derrick Jones Jr. trying to give it back to Luka Doncic and then went down for an easy bucket. So anybody's series right now, but stealing that home court advantage gives them a little bit more of a nod for me because they have the best player in the series for me. And that is, of course, Luka Doncic. So let me know what you think. Are my ratings good? Are they bad? It's always a fluid conversation. I do want to say that I appreciate all the support throughout the playoffs so far. We've dropped our last couple episodes and y'all have really destroyed it. If you're a YouTube head, you know a 1 out of 10 means that it was the best performing video of the last 10. In the last 2 episodes, we've been able to break our own record. So that's all because of y'all showed out and enjoyed it. And that's not even accounted for the audio platform, the listeners out there. Just know that we appreciate all the support. And as long as y'all here and y'all listening, y'all watching, I'm going to be here creating and giving my bad NBA takes. Appreciate y'all. And I'll see y'all in a couple days.